Here it is, another episode of the Infinite Banter Podcast. My name is Mark Jolliffe. Thank you for checking out the show. Got a big one today. Got my guy, Jason Warner Smith. He's an actor you've seen in many movies and TV shows, but many of us remember him as Gavin on The Walking Dead. We're going to talk to him about his career, what he's doing now, and his time on The Walking Dead. But before we do that, let's heed the word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And be sure to add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section of the application. This is the Infinite Banter Podcast. Once again, my name is Mark Jolliffe. Thank you for checking out the show. Thanks to everybody who's retweeted, listened, posted, done all those things. Greatly appreciated. Definitely want to encourage everybody out there who's listening to check out the last episode with hip-hop artist Eddie Kane. If you have not heard that episode, definitely go back and check it out. Check out his music, his new album, 1224, and check out eddiekane.com. Eddie Kane is doing big things, so definitely check him out. On today's episode, you know, The Walking Dead just came back for a little mini, I guess it's 10C part of their season 10. It's like an extended 6 episodes, and 4 of them already aired. Perfect timing. Got a chance to talk to, you know, one of my favorite actors from the show, and, you know, he played a role that I can relate to, a guy who was just always, just kind of seemed like he wanted to be doing something else. He played Gavin on The Walking Dead. Jason Warner Smith is on the show today. And of course, he's done many other things. We'll talk about movies and TV shows he's done and his wonderful documentary, Learning to Fly, where he took his Triumph Bonneville motorcycle and rode it cross country. And it's really a really great, great little film, and definitely recommend everybody watching it. We'll talk about that as well. So stay tuned for that. Jason Warner Smith is on the episode today. And I do want to get into a funny cigarette story at the end of the podcast here. So stay tuned for that. I don't smoke, but it's a story that's... You'll see. Just stay tuned. That's a teaser. You'll go ahead and check that out if you're into hearing about somebody who has no idea about smoking tell a story about smoking. So there you go. All right, this is the Infinite Banter Podcast. You can listen to it on all digital platforms, usual places like Spotify, iTunes, CastBox, Podcast.com. Go to Apple Podcasts, listen to it there, rate and review the show, follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Infinite Banter, and you can find clips of the show on YouTube. Just put in the search Infinite Banter. All right, let's get into it. Jason Warner Smith is here. Had a lot of fun talking to him, and let's bring that interview to you right now. But before we do that, as always, this show never begins until the one and only, the legendary king himself from Queens, DMC, says these words.
Yo, yo, what's up? This is me, DMC, the K-I-N-G, the greatest MC in history. And right now, you're listening to Infinite Banter, because we will banter on forever, because this is the only place for all of you to ever be. I be Infinite Banter.
You're tuned into the Infinite Banter Podcast. I am Mark Jolliffe, and right now I am thrilled to be joined by, he's an actor, musician, teacher. He rides a Triumph Bonneville motorcycle. I'll have to ask him about that as well. And you've seen him in various movies and TV shows like Rectify, 42, Birth of a Nation, 99 Homes, Sleepy Hollow. And of course, y'all know him as Gavin on The Walking Dead. The one and only Jason Warner Smith is here on the Infinite Banter Podcast. How you doing, Jason?
I'm fantastic, Mark. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's so much to talk to you about here. Before we get into The Walking Dead and some of the cool stuff, let's go back. How did you get your start in acting? How long have you been, you know, doing this? When did you first start doing it?
Well, I don't want to bore you with too long of a story.
It is called Infinite Banter, so you can go on as long as you want, but go ahead.
Oh, God. I don't want to bore me with this story. When I was about 9 years old, my mother was what we call a homemaker now. It was a homemaker back in the day. And she had time on her hands to work in the arts. She's not an artist, but she's an organizer. And so she and some other women like herself, and some men too, but mostly the ladies. This is, you know, the early 70s or mid-70s. They formed this group called the South Cobb Art Alliance. Cobb County, Georgia is what that's about. And long story short, they had, you know, drama classes for their kids to give them some culture. And so I got called. Yeah, you know, we're in the deep south here, so we did plays, basically a bunch of kids doing plays. Our parents came to see them, and I had a lot of fun doing it. And then that graduated into high school. And I did some theater in high school. I was never front line in high school, but in this South Cobb Art Alliance, they called it the Cobb Children's Theater and the Cobb Teen Theater. I was doing better there. And plus, I was working with a bunch of kids from all the other schools in the county. So I was meeting people from outside my little bubble of South Cobb, which was probably not the cultural hub of the county.
Right.
So to speak. So it was, you know, eye opening, and I learned a lot, met a lot of new cool people, and I had a lot of fun. You know, I wasn't good at Little League. I mean, I played it, but I wasn't very good. I wasn't sports inclined, but I did good at this. It wasn't great, and just enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed that. I never thought of it as an art form. It was just a recreation. It was something to do. And then it moved into college, and I started hanging out with real actors, people who, you know, that was their livelihood. Waiting tables and doing other jobs and acting and or just being professional actors.
Right.
Interesting people. So I did that and got involved in the Atlanta community theater world and enjoyed doing that. And it wasn't until I was about 22, I guess, that the idea of getting paid money to do this for a living.
That's always helpful, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just, you know, it never really crossed my mind. Or to work on camera. I'd
right.
never done that. So long, you know, again, eventually I was Atlanta back in the 80s. There was nothing going on here. You know, every now and then Burt Reynolds might make a movie and that was about it, you know. And so there were a lot of commercials and industrials and things like that. I got an agent, dipped my toe in the water, fiddled around with that. And by the end of the 90s, the beginning of the 90s, into the 80s, I moved to Los Angeles thinking I'm going to make it as a movie star in Los Angeles. And that lasted for 3 years. I parked a lot of cars. Did not become a movie star in Los Angeles and came back to Atlanta and got back into theater.
Right.
All right, this is going to be a hobby. This is a recreational thing for me. And I opened up a retail company where I sold blinds and shades and things like that to put in people's homes because I'd learned that trade out in Los Angeles because I was hanging them as a blue-collar guy.
Gotcha.
And did pretty well. And then around 2008, when the Georgia legislature passed this whole tax incentive deal, which drew all this business here to the state of Georgia. I still had this agent, and she's like, Jason, are you still in it? I'm like, I don't know. What's going on? She goes, well, things have changed. You might want to jump back in. I'm like, okay. You know, and I updated my headshot and all that. And then the first big break I got, I did some like a little TV show here and there, but first big break I got was I got a part on the remake of Footloose back in 2010.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it. Is there any dancing that you do in that? Did you have a dancing background or anything?
No, sir. No, no dancing. I played the local cop. And so, but it was a great gig because I only really worked on camera about 3 or 4 days. But due to the way that movies are made, I was on the schedule for like 5 weeks and I made a lot of money. And I was like, oh, this is how you make a living.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, okay, I'm hot. This is it. But no. Nothing happened for years after that and didn't make money like that again for a long time. And then I started learning how this business works and learned what my deficiencies were. You know, that one, was, I just kind of got lucky on it. I had the right look with the right accent and the right attitude, the right essence and the right place at the right time and booked that part, which is how most parts get booked anyway. And so I started circulating in that world. And so things ramped up so fast here in Atlanta. And the next big break was with Rectify, Ray McKinnon, who I had met when I lived in Los Angeles. We were acquaintances. I wouldn't say we were friends, but we knew each other. I had his phone number. Anyway, he had this show Rectify, and through another long story I won't bore you with, I ended up booking a role on that. And that changed a lot of things. That was another big stepping stone, a big learning experience. And then, of course, the next big break. I made quite a few movies in between that and Walking Dead. And I auditioned for The Walking Dead in season 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Oh, wow.
Didn't get there. But they liked me. And the casting people kept coming back to my agent and said, tell Jason to be patient. Scott Gimple really likes him, but he just hasn't found where to plug him in yet. And that sounds real nice, but from an actor's perspective, it's like, I want it now.
Yeah, right.
And luckily, you know, I was... Even though I was not as patient as I should have been, the role that I got plugged into of Gavin could not have gone any better other than I got to survive
right.
know, the 5 years. That's the only thing. That
right. You'd still be on the show. That'd be great. But yeah.
Yeah. I'd still be there. I'd be hanging out with Cooper Andrews, you know, and having some fun. But because we became friends during that time. And even though we both grew up here, we'd never met before. So and, you know, Josh and I both got whacked after season 8. But that was a wonderful experience. And the reason I'm here today, I don't think you'd be interviewing me if I hadn't been on that show.
No, probably not. Yeah, I would love to say that I would be, but no, that's definitely what got me acquainted with you, of course.
Yeah, it's a very to have been a hometown Atlanta. I was born here. So to be an Atlanta native who gets to book a decent, good, you know, run on one of the top shows in the world and work from home I would have never believed it. And to get to work with the likes of Lenny James on a daily basis.
Right.
I would never have believed that was going to happen in a million years. You know, I've also gotten to work with a lot of other famous people, but not to the extent that I got to work with Lenny. I mean, we became, you know, helping each other out. I mean, you know, we're not best friends or anything like that. We do have each other's phone numbers, but I don't bother him. He's a busy man. Every now and then I'll shoot him a text and go, "Hey, dude, I saw you in something. You were great." And he'll be like, "Hey, how are you?" And that'll be. He's great.
Well, he listens. I'm sure he'll tell me. Short. Yeah, of course.
I told you it'd be long. I tried to make it short. I'm sorry. We got a delay. I'll shut up and let you talk.
No, man. Like I said, the show's called Infinite Banter, so you can go on even longer if you wanted to, but yeah, it sounds like Georgia really became like a hubbub of acting and movies and filming and things. So the timing couldn't be better. I'm guessing that's really what started things off for you. Like you said, I mean, the Georgia becoming what it's become with TV and film really made a big difference for you and other actors in the area.
Atlanta has turned into a wonderful place. Now, this is all due to the fact that we have this wonderful tax incentive program here, which brings the business in. It's stayed in place for 13 years now, which has allowed infrastructure to build, and there's been a lot of that. So if suddenly tomorrow the state legislature, who's doing a lot of other stupid things right now here in Georgia, decided to pull the plug on this deal, it would have a major negative impact on that because Hollywood is a business and they're here for the money. However, I don't think it would be a complete disaster like it might have been 8 years ago because the infrastructure wasn't there. And there's enough businesses here and enough powerful business people. In my opinion, I don't have facts on this. I don't have any data. But in my opinion, there's enough money invested into this system now that, as you and I both know, the people who get people elected are rich people that own companies. And if they've got money invested in this, they don't want to see it go away. So I'm hoping that they will continue to graft this thing on through.
There you go. You're talking about on The Walking Dead, you had tried out for a couple of different roles in season 2, season 3. Do you know what those roles were, or were they just tryouts for anything? And how did the Gavin part eventually land in your lap?
Well, I'm sure if you've interviewed anybody else from this show, you know that they don't send us actual scripts from the show. They give us
right.
what they call dummy sides. You know that. I've only been able to figure out about 3 of them. One was very obvious. I was reading for the role of Richard.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I read for that. I read for the part of Jared that Josh played. That was obvious because he and I read for both roles.
You needed longer hair, probably. So,
well, you know, that part's more him. My part was more me. Even though Josh is one of the sweetest, nicest, most caring,
yeah.
loving movie dudes on the planet, but he can also play that real asshole really well.
Yes, he can.
Yeah.
He's a goon.
He's casting that role a lot.
Right.
So, he's got, this is part of the business. He's got that look, you know, mm-hmm. and I've got a little bit of a sinister look, and I play a lot of sinister cats, too. I think I know for a fact I read for the role of the doctor in Slab Town when they were back in the city in the hospital.
Oh, right. The guy cooking up hamsters or whatever, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the guy that had all the paintings and stuff in
right.
his office. And the guy that played that role I don't know his name, I don't know him, but I've seen interviews with him and read his resume, and he's an outstanding actor.
Yeah, he was great.
And an artist in general. I wish I remembered his name now, but I have no qualms with, you know, him getting that role. He was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read for the wolf guy who gets captured. I think that's what I was reading for. feels like that was the one. But other than that, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I read for Alicia Witt's husband in the
right.
Like, yeah.
The guy Carol shot that was dying for most of the episode, right? And
yeah, they got trapped in that place. And
right.
I had some other friends in that. The guy that booked it, he's from Florida, a very well-respected actor, and he did a great job. Fortunately for me, I didn't get that role because it was a one-off. I'm happy that I got the role that I did. Sorry if that's disappointing to him, but that's it is, baby.
Right. And I have had Vincent M. Ward, who played in season 3. He was one of the inmates. He played Oscar. And then, of course, Joshua Michael, who you know well, he was on with me last summer. He was a trip, man. I love talking to Josh, and he called himself he's a goon. He basically plays a goon in a lot of these movies, but of course on Walking Dead.
He's good at it, man.
Yeah,
you should get. Let's talk about getting Lou Temple on here to talk. About
him.
He's a great
yeah.
guy.
And him and Vincent worked obviously together in the he definitely has that look too. He could play different parts and. But
he was a wonderful human as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. From what I've seen in interviews and stuff, he seems like a great guy, of course, and. So working with Josh, when he came out here, he did a lot of impressions. Do you do any impressions? I'll ask you that off top. If you don't want to do any, that's okay.
Impression?
Yeah, he was doing.
I didn't know that Josh did impressions.
Yeah, he did a Nicolas Cage impression when he came on here. He did an Arnold Schwarzenegger one. He did
Josh
a bad.
Michael.
Yes. He did a Bill Cosby one, and he apologized while he was doing it. I'm like, that's all right. That's.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage, that's great. No, I mean, I do very poor, laughable impressions. You put me on the spot a little bit.
It's on you. You don't have to if you don't want to. But
I think, and this is one that needs a lot of work, but I think, everyone is going to be terrible at it now because...
I see.
Pineapple is good. I like to eat it. I'm stealing that from Jay Moore. He does a great impression of him.
He is the guy, for that impression, for sure.
I do a weak walk and...
Champagne, right? That was always the bet in SNL, You've got the wet guttermans, right?
most of your listeners won't even know who this is because he's so old and dead now. But he loved his rabbit, Harvey, and maybe they like Christmas movies. That's my lame Jimmy Stewart.
That would or very very tired Mitch McConnell. He could double as both.
Too bad that one of them's alive and the other one's not.
Yeah, you could definitely go there on that one.
Oh no! I remember, of course, since my impression of Jimmy Stewart's so bad, a lot of people go, "John Wayne? Is that John?" No, it's not John.
Jeez.
Uh-huh.
Well, He's a guy who's not here anymore, so it's 50% good.
Exactly. But that I'm not known for my impressions. Maybe I'll think of another one later. But I can do dialects pretty well, especially those from the English and Irish areas.
Oh, okay.
I can't do Scottish to save my butt.
Wow.
I try. I've even been to Scotland twice, and I'm like, I can't nail it. And and my British is not very specific. It's just kind of like the American version of Britain,
like Monty Python American or something. Or
I watched a lot of Monty Python as
right.
a kid, so all my British accents come from there. And I've done Irish in a play one time, and so that was fun. I had no idea Josh did impressions.
He's really good. He did I'm not a really big fan of Lord of the Rings, but the little guy with the ring, what's his name?
Frodo? Gollum. I've heard him do his Gollum.
Yeah.
Yes, I have heard that.
That one spot on.
The thing is, usually when we're together, you got Ross Marquand there and we all just shut up and listen.
Yeah. So yeah.
He's the king.
Yes, he is. What was it like working with Josh and that whole cast? So you talked about Lenny James earlier and Kari Payton. I mean, you guys worked really close together during the scenes with the Saviors and the Kingdom.
Josh is a complete asshole.
Yes, he is. No.
Well, the thing is, Josh and I knew of each other, but we had never really spent any time. We'd never hung out together, ever. I really met him on the set of The Walking Dead as like two human beings getting to know each other. and our relationship is great. I mean, again, he lives about 5 miles that way, but we don't hang, of course, with the pandemic, nobody's hanging out.
Right.
We don't really hang out together. It's not that we don't like each other. It's just, you know, we got other things that we do. But no, he's just the most, he is a Renaissance man. I mean, he plays the drums. He can do, you know, draw and paint, writes, acts. So, you know, I'm not jealous, but I'm, envious, I guess, is the same word, but it's just like, I'm impressed and just happy to be a friend of his because of his, you know, he has talents that I was not born with.
Yeah, we played a couple of his songs on the episode I did with him. So he was told me he's in a band and everything. I'm like, oh wow, let me hear some of your music. You know,
yeah, I mean, he's done it all, and he's living the life. I mean, that's what he does. I don't know when was the last time he had a regular job. I don't know when that changed for him.
Right.
It's been wonderful to have him be a part of my life. We spend more time together at, you know, Comic Cons than we do in real life. Now, I don't know if we'll ever have that opportunity again,
right,
because the pandemic and also the way that the world works, our characters were not big enough on the show to where when all the new cast comes in, we kind of drop off and
right,
they bring in, you know, not, we weren't regulars. I mean, we could go if we were invited, but, you know, it's kind of like our time is over. We're actually doing one. And you know, we knew that was coming. The person who puts those things together manages,
right,
the same manager. He's like, you know, I don't know if this will work, but if it does, it'll last a while, and then it'll be over. Unless you book, you know, Firefly, or you book Star Trek, or you book Star Wars, then, you know, you'll get back in. And we haven't, or at least I haven't.
Right.
We're doing one, though, in May. I think it's May, called The Camp. It's down in Senoia, however you say it, down in near the set of The Walking Dead. So that'll be fun to get back and see some of the fans and see Josh and hang out.
Yeah.
Hopefully it won't be hot by then, and we'll be outdoors and it'll be, you know, nice and breezy. So
I've been to a couple of the Walker Stalker cons and a lot of these conventions, so I kind of miss it. It's been over a year since I've been to one, obviously. So
right. I mean, I went to Atlanta twice, New Jersey and Chicago. Those are the only Walker Stalkers I did, but I had a wonderful time at all of them. The last one in Atlanta was kind of it was a shit show. That's when the wheels were coming off the wagon for that whole system, and
right,
it was like so obvious. But I still enjoyed seeing the fans and meeting everybody. But as far as like how the show was run, a lot of people got treated really badly. There's two people out there right now that I owe money to because they never got their picture made with me, but I can't find them. So if anyone's listening, if you were two people that were supposed to get your picture made with me and you paid $35 or whatever it was, I'd happily pay you back if you can prove it was you. So I just feel terrible about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because people go there with the idea of meeting the celebrity and, you know, doing all that and to go through it and not have that physical souvenir in your hand. Yeah, I guess that would be... That'd be rough.
Cool. I mean, maybe they came by my table and they got a, you know, an autograph, but we didn't have the professional picture
right,
that they paid the extra money and waited in line for. So I just, you know, I still got paid for it, but we never made the picture. And I just want to give the money back to them. So
if you guys are listening.
If you're listening, find me. I was talking, you were asking about Lenny James. Now that's...
Yeah, and you'd mentioned him earlier, too. Yeah, he was just a phenomenal actor, of course.
Yeah. I don't know how much you know about him, but that dude, I mean, he, you know, unless I've been misinformed, I mean, he came from nothing. I mean, I think he told me, if I'm wrong about this, correct me, world, but, you know, he wasn't shy about it. He grew up in an orphanage. You know, he was a poor, young black man living in London and had talent and luck, but I don't know what his journey was, but he rose up to the top of where he needed to be in that world, and is just, I watched Blade Runner 2049 again the other night just to watch it a second time to kind of, and I liked it so much better the second time. The first time it just went by so fast.
Right.
And he is just incredible. Again, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Fucking hysterically funny. And then I saw some ridiculously bizarre, over the top movie he was in with Guy Pearce, and it's like a prison on the moon or a prison on a satellite. It's just all over the top, silly. But he, you know, he's great in it. And he, I that's when I like texted, dude, I just saw you in this marvelously ridiculous movie with Guy Pearce. And he goes, yeah, that was great. We shot that in, like, I don't know, Budapest or something crazy like that. And I said, well, I hope they paid you a lot because the movie's just a mess. He goes, but you're great in it. Not enough. I'm like, all right.
Enough said.
to have the one-on-one mano a mano acting moments that the writing team gave he and I, to be able to work like that with someone, because before I was on the show, and still to this day, everybody says, what's your favorite episode of The Walking Dead ever? And it's clear. It was the greatest for me as an actor. I mean, after I watched that episode, I was like, just give him the Emmy now.
Right,
just hand it to him. They didn't even get nominated. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, best star appearance or something. I was like, it was just, his performance was amazing in that. And so to get to just work with him and, you know, in the trenches and, you know, sweating in the woods of Georgia together and doing all that great stuff, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, the scene where he chokes Richard to death, you know, Gavin kind of has a look on his face like, I work with Negan and this guy's, he's on something else. He's on another level of disturbed. No problem. Yeah,
that definitely scared Gavin, you know.
Yeah.
So, but just, yeah, I just enjoyed being, you know, as a person, you know, just working with him as a fellow actor who's got my back.
Right.
And you know, and not that anybody else wasn't like that, but he and I had, you know, he, Josh, Kari Payton, those are like my three, like my scene buddies, my scene partners. Now, of course, Cooper Andrews was there, but we weren't really having a scene together. We were in a scene together, but it wasn't the two of us. It was always Kari and myself, Lenny and myself, or Josh and myself. That was good. And then in season 8, when I moved in with the whole gang at the what do they call it, the sanctuary, Megan and all those guys, it was such a different experience, because now I'm sitting at the table with all series regulars and me,
right,
who's just a recurring guest star. I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah, there you go.
Podcast. And so that experience was not as, I'm not knocking those guys. I was the new guy. I was the FNG. They didn't know me. And they have, you know, they had their repartee. They had their jokes. They had their relationships. And it's a weird dynamic, and this, you know, for people who were not in this business, it's a weird dynamic. Now, again, and this is just my experience. It doesn't mean that it's universal, but the experience I've had when you're dealing with that is that, you know, series regulars, they're paid a whole lot more money than we are, but we're doing the same exact job.
Right.
Now, on the set, off the set, their job is a lot more. They have a lot more to do. They're being flown around. They're having to do promo shots. They're going out and doing, you know, talking about the show and doing interviews. And, you know, that's a lot of work, and they get paid for it, but it's a lot of responsibility. I mean, the show kind of, you know, I don't mean this in a racist or wrong-headed way, but the show owns them,
right,
you know, and 'cause that's why they get paid so much. You know, like that, they work for them. And we don't. We get done on, you know, when we wrap out on an episode, we go home and we might get called for another episode. We might not, you know. And then there's kind of this gray area between where there's people that are not series regulars and they're heavily recurring guest stars that get a guarantee. Like, okay, we're going to guarantee you'll get paid for 8 episodes. We may or may not need you, but to keep you on staff and so you don't cut your hair and go do another project, we're going to pay you. But it causes a really strange dynamic when you've got someone, and again, it might have just been me, but you've got this new person coming in to this group of people who spend a lot of time together. And they weren't bad or mean. It was just I was kind of the new guy.
Right.
And so I wasn't in that. We didn't have a common experience like Kari and Josh and Cooper and Carlos and everybody else that was in that group in that parking lot. We all started on the same day, you know, except Lenny.
Right.
And Lenny, you know, and I got to spend a lot of time with him. So,
well, that actually fits though, because as a viewer, it always felt like Gavin was the one savior who, this is how I took him, as like somebody who really didn't like being that job. Like, he was a guy who went to work every day. It was like somebody who manages, like, a store or something. And he goes to work, he punches a clock. But when something goes wrong, he's like, oh, shit, I got to do this. All right, you know. So I can relate to him because we've all had jobs that we do but don't necessarily like them. I always felt like Gavin would rather be doing something else, but this is what he's doing now. And he's dealing with these, you know, alter egos and crazy people, but that's what it felt like as a viewer. Is that how you portrayed Gavin?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it evolved into.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing about doing multi-episode television is that the characters evolve over time. And because what happens is, if you're fortunate like I was, the writers start writing to you. They figure out, like, oh, okay. Because I can remember it distinctly because my first day, my first episode, Josh and I only worked one day. We were in, we were out, and then we were gone for months because that was episode 2 or 3, I can't remember which it was now, of season 7. And then we didn't come back until like episode 10 or 8 or something like that. Right. And so between the time we shot that first one and based upon what they saw me do in that first one and how I was portraying Gavin, because not everybody gets to see that, just the Nicotero, the director, and the showrunners and, you know, producers and writers, I guess, watch the audition, and then they'll adjust the script a little, maybe, I don't know. But then after seeing my performance, they're like, okay, yeah, this is Gavin's middle management. He doesn't want us to wrote, you know. And so they wrote that way. And I can remember because my director on the first episode was Nicotero. He's the one that actually got me hired, so I'm in forever in debt to him. My second director was Jeff January, who I had not met until that day. He kept, after every take, he's like, grumpy dad, grumpier dad, grumpier and grumpier. That's what he wanted, and that's how the script was kind of written, and that's how I, you know, Gavin evolved into this, you know, pissed off guy that just, let's get this over with, you know. It's a character that they hadn't really had on the show before. So it was such an honor to be given the responsibility of carrying that through that short time that I was on the show.
Yeah, he never really felt like a villain. He just kind of felt like a reluctant, you know, bad guy. But if tables were turned, he would be the same guy on the other side. He just kind of like, oh, you got to do this today? Like, ugh.
Yeah, and honestly, at the core of all that, Gavin's a coward. That's why he's there.
Right.
You know, I don't know. We don't know how he fell in with the Saviors, but my imagination tells me that, you know, he was with another group. The Saviors came in and they killed off some people and said, now you're with us. And he's like, now I'm with you.
Yep. There you go.
I'm Liv Negan. And then he, you know, and he had really good managerial skills and he got stuff done and he's reliable and he got, you know, so he rose up the ranks and that's how, you know, and he didn't cause trouble. And he didn't threaten Negan, and he, you know, got shit done. And so, and you know, it didn't matter what mood he was in. He just got it done. There was a line they wrote. It was after I was dead. They didn't know I was dead. And Negan was talking to Simon, I think. And they're like, hey, you know, if we heard from Gavin from Chemical, I guess, don't worry about Gavin. He's dry and tight. He'll you know, be back. You know, they trusted and respected Gavin. They didn't want to hang out with him, but he got the job. Yeah.
Right.
But little did they know, he had a stick through his neck. So, anyway.
You got to talk about that. So how far in advance, you always hear about the stories when actors know that their time is coming. How far in advance did you know that Gavin's time was basically going to expire? And then, of course, we were led to believe Morgan was going to be the one to do in Gavin, but it was actually young Henry with the staff. And I'm sure you've done pictures at cons with the neck thing, too. I'm sure people ask you, hey, can you stand next to this fake stick or whatever? But, what'd you know about that scene going out into it?
Yeah, it's funny. My demise was at the opening of the second half of the season. So there was a 4-week break in shooting. And they do that. They shoot from May until August, and they take a month off, and then they pick back up. Or last week in July, I don't remember how they break. Maybe it's after the 4th of July. They break for 4th of July and they come back in August, something like that. And that's why the season has a break in the middle of it, because they take a break in the middle of shooting, at least before the pandemic. So it was my last night of working on episode 8, where I capture Ezekiel. And we had just wrapped, and it was a night shoot, and the sun's peeking through the trees, the sky's lighting up, and we're wrapping up. and I don't look at my phone much while I'm working, and so I pulled my phone out, turned it on, and there's a voicemail from Scott Gimple. I'm like, this is not good. I remember Carter was sitting next to me. I said, Kari, I turned my phone and said, he's like, ah, damn, man. I was like, you probably already knew because you're a regular and you knew this already. But, or he was a guarantee, I think, at that point. He hadn't made regular.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
Hey, Scott, give me a call. I'm like, no, I don't want to. So I called the next day and he apologized profusely and said, hey, man. And I was like, I got it. You know, here's my dear John. But so I had a month before I got killed because of the break. Now, if it had been not on that particular break, I guess I would have had a week or two notice. And I didn't see the script until after the break was over. And then when I got the script, I was thrilled. Up until the point I realized, oh,
yeah,
this is the episode where Carl fucking dies. Nobody's going to even remember me. They're not going to, you know, but I got a great week of work out of it. I got all that time with Lenny. And I got all that time with Nicotero because he was directing it.
Right.
That was awesome. But everything was all about Carl, 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 you know. And Chandler's a wonderful person, so, you know, I wasn't pissed about that. But it was just like, no one's going to remember this.
No.
And sure enough, they're like, when did you die? I forgot what happened. Yeah. And I explain it, and they're like, oh, yeah. You know, there's my joke I tell around that is, so we... I don't know how old you are, but do you remember a woman named Farrah Fawcett?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm over 40, so that Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
And, yeah.
You remember Farrah Fawcett?
Yeah.
You remember when she died?
It was the same day as Michael Jackson, if I'm right. Yeah.
That you're one of the few.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm Farrah Fawcett and Chandler's Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Well, maybe somebody's got your poster on the wall with the red bikini or whatever.
You have them like right here behind me. You know?
Right. That's a good way to put it, though. Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of us forgot that Gavin died in that same episode. And I didn't remember it, so you just brought up that is the same episode with Carl. So, and you get killed by basically Diet Carl, the guy who takes Carl's place on the show, essentially, for next year or so, whatever.
Who's that?
You know, the young Henry, he kind of takes over the storyline from the comic books that Carl would have lived with, you know, with the Whisperers and everything.
He's got his head on a stick where it belongs.
Gavin's revenge.
Well, what's funny is... that's Maxon, right? Maxon Lentz? No, but his brother took over.
Right.
What's his name? The other Lentz. Their mother, and of course Madison, who played the girl way back in the day, Carol's daughter, their mother, Kelly Collins Lentz, and I are friends. They're from here, and she and I played husband and wife in a movie years ago together. So it's like this real incestuous kind of thing going on there. I'm friends with her husband, I've met most of them. But anyway, what was really nice, though, is like, you know, I said all my goodbyes, everything was lovely, and then I thought I was done. And then I get a call, you know, 2 weeks later, and the agent's like, hey, Walking Dead wants you back on the set. I'm like, what? What?
Just a flesh wound. He's back. He's fine.
You're going to do my backstory? What the hell, you know? So found out that I got to play that ghost, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. But, you know, it kind of like ruined the whole, hey, I'll see you later, buddy.
I had to kinda,
everybody's like, what are you doing? I thought we said goodbye. I'm like, you know, I got this thing I got to do. But it was nice to have that little extra something. The only thing, the only disappointment I had, and again, this is just pure ego, is that I did not get invited to appear on The Talking Dead. Because it would have been the same episode as the Carl goodbye.
Oh, right.
They weren't about that. It would have been stupid and awkward to have me there.
Oh, by the way, right, yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. Doesn't mean I like it, but
right.
I totally get it. Because I would imagine if it had just been me dying that episode, they would have invited me out and didn't get to do it.
It's like the old Johnny Carson talk show when they ran out of time for the musician or the juggler or something. Right. You were the juggler.
I was sitting in the green room like, what?
Practicing all week. Damn it.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny you brought up the ghost thing because I brought that up with Joshua, you know, how he came back as the ghost haunting Morgan. And props to you because you had tweeted the American Werewolf in London scene where they used for the reference point for Joshua Michael's character when Nicotero was like, hey, this is who you're playing, you're kind of playing homage to that movie. So that was really cool that you put that up there. I don't really have a question. I just like, thank you for doing that, because I wasn't aware of that movie scene. And, you know, again, you played the ghost just like Joshua Michael did. So that, again, like you said, it'd be pretty cool to come back for that. It's not quite coming back to life, but hey, it works.
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. I was hoping that when he left and went over to the other show that he would keep being haunted by my ghost, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
It's not a ghost show. If it ever becomes one.
No, he moved on from that. Yep.
You know, and you've done a lot of other work too, and I just recently watched Christine. I had no idea about that story, and I worked in radio, and I was blown away by it. And you have a part in that movie as well. Talk about working on that film, and to me, like, the most awkward phone call on screen I've ever seen. Like, when you were answering the phone, and you're just like, what do I do?
We had a lot of fun shooting that scene. It's one of the few moments in that entire movie when the audience gets to have a little bit of a, you know.
Oh, it's so heavy, yeah.
Yeah, that was a wonderful experience. A guy named Antonio Campos, I forgot the name of his production company. It's like he and two other cats, and when one's directing, the other two produce, and then they just kind of rotate through their group. I used to know, but I've forgotten. They've done some very interesting films. Antonio's got he just came out with The Devil All the Time, which he tried like hell to get me a part in. I auditioned for like four or five different roles. But when I saw the movie, I'm like, yeah, he was right. He picked the right people. I was not the right guy for these parts, which was disappointing. But, hey, it gave me a fair shot. Yeah, I remember I read for that, and I read for the guy that owns the gun store. Actually, that's the part that they had me audition for.
Okay.
New Orleans actor, just fantastic cat, beard, the whole – what the hell is his name? I'm getting too old. My names are slipping. Anyway, you can look him up.
Yeah.
Dub it in later, but he was great in that role and perfect for it. And so, but what was nice is Antonio said, I got the offer, and they said, you're playing Mitch. I'm like, who the hell is Mitch? And they said, well, actually, it's a pretty good role, Jason. You're going to work for over a week, and you got all these other scenes. I'm like, oh, great.
There you go.
So, very, very happy. We shot that down in Savannah, got to work with Rebecca Hall.
Right.
Another, I mean,
she's
never
great.
Would have believed in a million years that was going to happen. And then what was even cooler is I got to work with J. Smith Cameron, who plays my girlfriend, who is the mother on Rectify.
Ah, see, it all comes full circle.
We kind of knew each other and saw each other at lunch and stuff, but of course we never had a scene together because of Rectify's situation. So that was fun. She's amazing, and her husband is Kenny Lonergan, one of the greatest playwrights living in America right now. Got to meet him, and it was just such a great thing, and it was so much fun working on that. It was a tough shoot, because it was a very low-budgeted project, and so we didn't have, like, fancy facilities or anything. We were just in, like, tents and a house and, you know. But I brought my wife down to Savannah. We rented a nice hotel room and stayed near the beach, and where we were on Tybee Island off of Savannah.
Nice.
And I just had a wonderful time.
I've never been to Savannah. I've always wanted to go. I've heard great things. I've been to Atlanta, but never been to Savannah.
Yeah, Savannah's a cool town, man. It's go for St. Patrick's Day. That's when it's crazy next year.
Next year, right?
I've been a part of some really amazingly good movies. Small roles, but 99 Homes, Christine, Thank You for Your Service, The Birth of a Nation. These films that are just really wonderful movies. Not a lot of people have seen them, but I'm honored and proud to be a part of it, even in my small way, to be included in that cast. You know, as much as I'd love to have some small role in, you know, Ant-Man 3 or something like that.
Yeah, we got to get you in the Marvel Universe, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because that'd be an amazing paycheck, but it would never compare to the, you know, the level of, I'm not knocking Marvel, I love this. I watch them way too much. I could recite them practically, but it's not going to be that same experience you get working on a film like that. Like Christine. I'm glad you, thanks for watching that.
Yeah, it's on Tubi. Anybody out there wants to go see it, it's on Tubi. Check it out.
It was on Netflix for quite some time as well. It might still be on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, and it's got, you know, I'm a big fan of Dexter, so I saw Michael Hall on there as well. It's like, that was an easy,
Hilarious in it.
Yeah.
He's hilarious. I met him. I didn't get to work with him. We just met briefly, but yeah, I mean, such a great experience. That's a tragic story. Let's not ruin it for the people.
No, definitely check it out. Especially if you haven't heard of what happens,
tragic,
watch
true
it.
Story that happened in 1974. Yeah, it has nothing to do with a haunted car chasing someone through a parking lot.
Which I like that movie a lot. Stephen King, it's a fantastic horror film from
Piece of trivia, the director of my first episode of Rectify was Keith Gordon, who plays the young man in Christine.
Wow.
It all comes around, full
circle, man, just like Rectify did. And speaking of Marvel, you did work with Chadwick Boseman in 42 and talk about there's that scene at the gas station and really powerful scene.
I get upset thinking about that. But, yeah, I mean, we didn't really hang out. We were hanging out that day, but we didn't have long conversations or anything because we were, antagonist, protagonist kind of thing. And a lot of times people, that are playing in those roles don't want to just get all chummy. So we didn't. And I appreciate that. Andrew Garfield was the same way on 99 Homes. It's like, I don't want to, I could tell. He's like, I don't want to hang out and be your buddy because we hate each other. And in the movie, at the rap party, he couldn't have been nicer. I mean, when I saw that on the news, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
No, because I was hoping to meet him again and work with him. Right. I actually did meet him another time. Real quick story. He was working on Get On Up, and they were shooting that up in Natchez, Mississippi, while I was working on 99 Homes. And my best friend Jeff had flown in from Los Angeles to come and hang out with me in New Orleans where we were working on that. My wife was in town hanging out, and we were having fun in New Orleans on my days off. And so Jeff knew the production designer, Mark Ricker, on Get On Up. He said, let's drive up to Natchez and go hang out with Ricker and watch him shoot a movie. They're shooting a big scene in a gymnasium. It was the Tammy Show. So we drove up there, and there's Chadwick, all dressed up as James Brown with that big
thing
coming out the front. And so I went over, and I said, well, maybe he remembers me. And I went over and I said, Chadwick, hey, man, it's Jason. I was the gas station attendant at 42. He goes, oh, hey, man. He stayed in – I talked to James Brown that afternoon.
Oh, he stayed in character.
He stayed in the voice, stayed in the whole thing. He was practicing his dance moves. We talked for a minute, and then it's like, good to see you, man. This is fantastic. We're going to watch, have fun and can't, all right, man, we'll see you. And that was it. And that was the last time I saw him.
In a way, you met James Brown and Chadwick at the same time. That's pretty crazy because he was so, it was like James Brown when you watch that movie. It's like amazing. He's James Brown. Yeah.
I wish the movie had been better.
Right.
But he was amazing in it. The movie was kind of a mess, but he was amazing in it.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to maybe running into him again.
Yeah.
But
I know he's nominated for an Oscar. We've still got a lot of work of his to watch and to remember him by. But, yeah, it's just a tragic story. But the way he lived his life throughout all of it is just commendable for sure.
That is a true human being right there.
Another movie I wanted to ask you about was Mississippi Grind. Are you good at gambling or card playing? Is that something you do?
Nope.
Not at all.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I can do it, but I'm not good at it.
Right.
It's funny. We actually, I'm only in that movie for a minute, but I got to work with Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds for a brief moment, and because Ryan Reynolds was doing most of the talking during that. And actually, that monologue he does, if you've seen it, is twice as long. They cut it.
Oh, really? They cut it?
It is a long story, and that dude was on the money. I mean, he was just doing his thing, and it wasn't like he was ad-libbing. It was the script. And I had to interrupt at some point, and I was so mesmerized by him one time. He said, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just, he looks over, and he's like, don't leave me hanging, brother. I'm like, oh, shit, sorry, man. Yeah, blah, 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 cut, cut, cut. But we had a rehearsal for the card playing. Have you seen it, Team Mississippi?
Just bits and pieces, not the full length of it. But
we did all this rehearsal to get the card playing right. It ends up they never even shot the table showing our, so it didn't matter.
Right.
But we needed it to flow. So we sat at a table with the directors, Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, and worked all the way through it. And all this detail about how we'd have our cards and when we would hit and when we would stay and when we would bet. And, it took a long time. And Mendelsohn is a huge card player.
Okay.
He was getting a little bit miffed because we didn't know what we were doing. They ended up recasting somebody because they couldn't quite handle the cards.
Wow.
They put him in another role. They gave him another role and moved him out of that scene. And fine actor just couldn't handle it. It's just the dealing with the cards. And so we had it all set up. Dealers here, da-da-da-da-da-da. We get on to set on the day, and they end up flipping everything up around. So now the dealer's over here and not over there. And it's like it was a disaster.
Oh, geez.
And the first two takes were a complete train wreck. And they couldn't get the air conditioning turned off. It was too loud. And we're in a real casino. Outside this glass window, there's people out there gambling right there. It's 2 in the morning on this riverboat casino in New Orleans. And it was just like, oh, my God, this is just awful. It took 2 nights to shoot that scene. And we shot, all night into the morning. But once we got it going, it started working. Because whenever you shoot a around a table, you got to move the camera all the way around.
It
takes a long time to do that. But it was cool. It was a very cool experience. I'm glad I was part of that. It's a good movie. It's made in the old kind of 70s style. I like that. It was shot on 35 millimeter, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Shot on film.
That's definitely on the list. I've got to make, and a couple of Marvel guys, Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds. So, you're indirectly working for Marvel, but not.
I'm like Kevin Bacon, one step away, man. One step away.
Who also was in an X-Men movie. So, but speaking of things you're good at, learning to fly, that was just a tremendous piece of work you did, riding your motorcycle. And I think you said you turned 50 years old and there you go. You're on that trek. Talk about that whole experience. I mean, anybody listening, definitely go check this out. It's amazing. Just the scenery, because I've never been to a lot of those places you went to.
Yeah, I've never been to a lot of the places I went to. It was, I mean, I tell the story in the movie, so I won't bore you with that. But yeah, it was, it was going to be a 5-week trip on my bike by myself, except 4 days I spent with my buddy Jeff. I talked about him before. He lives in Los Angeles, and he at the time owned a cabin in Taos, New Mexico. So the only appointment I had to keep was to show up at that cabin at a certain point, and then we were having my birthday party in Los Angeles, so I had to fly my wife out, and I had to be in L.A. on a certain date. Other than that, I could be anywhere I wanted to, whenever I wanted to. And I planned a little bit. I really wanted to see Devil's Tower. I wanted to see Mount Rushmore. I wanted to go to Yellowstone. But other than that, there was no other agenda other than meet Jeff on this date, because his birthday is around the same time, so we're celebrating both our birthdays, and then get to L.A. by a certain date, and then get back home before the weather turned and I ran out of money. So the last week of the trip was the least fun of it, because I was on the interstate the whole time. That's no fun.
Right, you're not really seeing anything.
I mean, you're just get home. And it's funny, because I had another friend of mine at the time who said, Jason, we'll gather money. We will ship your motorcycle back from Los Angeles and buy you a plane ticket. Why are you doing this? I'm like, I got to finish the trip.
Yeah.
Got to finish the trip.
Yeah.
6 days of interstate and boring and hot. And I mean, it was I made the most fun of it that I could. But anyway, I had a little iPhone 5S. And I had a little mount for it on the handlebars so I could listen to tunes and use it for my Google Maps to find my way. It never not worked. It always
That's
had a
great.
Signal somehow. There was a couple of spots where I was afraid I went off the asphalt on the dirt for a while in Wyoming, and I did lose signal. I have to use like a map. Funny story about that. I had my map out one time and I couldn't quite see what I wanted to see, and I reached down to the map and went tap tap. I was like, "Oh, this is a piece of paper. It doesn't expand."
Oh man, that's hilarious.
Anyway, but it was great. I mean, I would say, I didn't want to do more than ride more than like 150 miles a day. And I kind of mapped it out. It's like, all right, if I go all the way up here and all the way down here, it's going to be about 6,500, 7,000 miles. And if you divide that up by 35 days, it's about 150 miles a day. Or actually, in 4 or 5 of those days, I didn't go anywhere. So 30 days, it's about, I don't know math, but it's like, 100. It's all I got to do. How hard can that be?
Sounds more reasonable when you put it like that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what, because I had a lot of motorcycle friends like, dude. That Bonneville, it's not made for this. What are you doing? And you're putting all these boxes and all this camping gear on there. I mean, it's a tough little motorcycle, but dude, your ass is going to be killing you. What are you, there's mountains and rivers and storms and shit between here and
off-road,
there.
Off-road, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a carbureted motorcycle. It's not fuel injected. You're going to run into altitude problems. And I'm like, fuck it, I'm going, you know, and I don't have a windscreen. I was wearing an open face helmet with goggles. I mean, I just was like, I'm going to just challenge myself, and I may end up, you know, a week out tucking tail and coming home. I don't know. And it was about the third or fourth, in the middle of that first week, I was having doubts. Like, what the fuck am I doing? I was halfway between Memphis and Topeka, you know, thinking, and it was cloudy, and the wind was like screaming up out of the Gulf, and just like having to tack into the wind, and like, you know, just like, this is not fun. I'm in a wheat field, it's cold. But when I got to some point, I turned north to go up to Topeka. The sun came out, the wind was at my back, and it was like, okay, if it stays like this, this is worth every minute.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that was kind of like the crossover point where I was like, okay, I'm in this. I got 4.5 more weeks of this. Enjoy every minute of it. And I did. And there were, you know, I got really, really lucky with the weather. I got rained on.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looked like it was good weather for the most part.
Miracle. I mean, the one time I was with Jeff, actually, and we could see the rain because we're out in the, you know, the plains. It's like, all right, we pull over. He already had his rain suit on. And I was like, it took me 10 minutes to get my rain suit on. By the time I got it on, of course, the rain had passed by.
I'm right.
Like, well, that was stupid. You know, and then, you know, the only other time I got caught in the rain, I mean, I was already, you know, had my tent set up and was camping. So I never got caught in any bad weather. It was cold coming out of Yellowstone going south. A front came in out of Canada and chased me all the way down to Colorado. And so for about 3 days, it was all I could do to stay warm. I think I had on all of my clothes. All of my clothes were on me.
Oh, wow.
And a heated vest and heated gloves, rain suit, everything. I had everything on, and I could go about, you know, 30 miles, and I have to get off and put my hand next to the engine just shake
it
a little bit. But, you know, I mean, it wasn't raining. It wasn't snowing. It was just cold. It was 40-something degrees and cloudy, so nothing to warm you up. And I don't know have you ridden motorcycles?
I've never done it. I'd be scared to try it, but I've always wanted to. I've always envied people like yourself who can do it. But
yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, I mean, when you're at 50, 60 miles an hour, that's how fast the wind's blowing. So that's wind chill. And you get cold. I didn't have a big old Harley with a big screen up front to block the wind. I'm just in it.
Yeah.
What I wanted.
You felt all of it.
Yeah, but there was, again, you feel it, you smell it, you hear it, you know, it's awesome. It's a visceral, amazing experience. The bike was a champ. I never had a problem with it.
I was going to ask if you still have the bike and how it survived.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I was riding it last weekend. Yeah. And the funny thing about that is that since that trip, I haven't really had as much fun on the bike because that was kind of like this peak experience.
Yeah.
And nothing compares to that.
Yeah, driving to the grocery store doesn't have the same feeling, right?
Now, one thing about where I live down here in Georgia, the North Georgia Mountains and the Panhandle of North Carolina and Eastern Tennessee, the Smoky Mountains area and the Appalachians, is like people from all around the world come to that part of the world to ride motorcycles. So I live in the playground of motorcycledom. But I just, you know, it's just, okay, I'll go up, ride around, drag some pegs through the mountains, and it's fun. But I want to take off on another trip. But trust me, I will not do it on that motorcycle. Love my bike, but
right.
I will have something big and cushy.
There you go.
My ass was killing me that first week. I mean, just, you get on the bike, and, you know, it's like a bruise, and it's like, you got to wait for the blood to squish out so it quits hurting. So I got it down to where I was smoking cigarettes back then, and I would ride 35 miles, and that's when my ass would hurt too much, and I'd pull over wherever I was. Now, if I was close to a town, I'd pull on in, but if not, I'd just stop in the middle of nowhere. That's why you got all that footage.
Yeah.
I'd just stop and get off the bike, smoke a cigarette, make some videos, make some pictures, and then get back on the bike and ride for another 35 miles. And, you know, I do that 5 times a day, and it was easy.
Yeah, my Huffy that I've ridden around here on Bike Pass is not quite the same as what you probably dealt with in the butt department.
Yeah, I wish, you know, I thought in my naive mind, I thought I could just pull off the road and camp anywhere. But it's just the world's not like that anymore.
Right.
So I only camped in designated camp areas, and I stayed in Airbnbs and hotels half the time. You know, because after a while you're like, screw it, I want a shower, I want a drink,
right,
and I'm not, I don't want to sleep in a bed. There were Motel 6s and stuff like that. And every night I stayed in a couple of nice hotels and spent some money a couple of times. But yeah, you know, I spent some money on that trip, you know, and rode about, the bike says I went 7,000 miles, but the speedometer on that Bonneville runs about 5 miles an hour fast. So
oh, okay.
I actually probably went about 6,500 miles, but yeah,
you could round it up. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, my favorite part of it is like twice you drink Jack Daniels with Diet Coke and once at Coke Zero. Which one's better, Coke Zero or Diet Coke, to mix with Jack Daniels? That was my main question from it.
Neither one. That's why I went to drinking it straight out of the bottle after that. Now, it didn't matter. Just whatever cola flavor I could
there
get
you
in
go.
It. I mean, that's, it's funny. I always talk about, you know, bourbon and Coke. It smells like college. You know,
so oh, jeez. Like. That's a good way to put it.
It's what it is. Bourbon and Coke and rum and Coke, that's what I drank when I was in college because that's all I knew and that's all I, you know, had the bowls for. I didn't like beer, and, you know, I would drink those when I went out. And so now whenever I drink it, every now and then I'll have a Jack and Coke, you know, just for old time's sake. It's like,
there you go. The real fuel, not just for the bike, but for you. And, of course, the last thing I'll say about the documentary there was just the view of the Zion National Park in Utah. It's just amazing. And you end it with that, like, hey, just so you know, here's some footage. Just watch this.
Well, that was, it, you know, it's funny because when my friend Jeff and I hooked up in Taos, and we spent like 3 days hanging out in Taos, and it was his birthday. His birthday's earlier than mine. And so then he had his bike, and so we loaded all our gear up and took off. And I said, Jeff, you know, actually, it wasn't quite his birthday yet. I said, you know, you've told me this is my trip. Go do whatever I want, and you'll just follow me. But when you're by yourself, you don't think about anybody else. And so even with that, he and I are best friends. Even with him saying that, I'm looking in the mirror the whole time. Does he want to stop? I'm thinking about him, which is a good thing, I guess. But it just changes the dynamic of the ride.
Yeah.
And I ride with other people all the time. But when you're by yourself, all you're doing is, you know, being safe, paying attention to cars and whatever, cows and all that sort of thing, and potholes. But when you got another person, you're also concerned about them as well. So right. I said, he goes, I want to go to Bryce Canyon for my birthday. I want to wake up in Bryce Canyon on my birthday. And I said, all right, we'll do that. And so we made a, that's where we headed off to. We were going out of our way, not straight. We weren't going straight to LA. And when we got there late in the day and all the campgrounds were full. And so we couldn't stay there. So we ended up staying in this little, we had a good time, but we stayed in this little roadside inn and went to Bryce Canyon the next day. Why am I telling you this?
Cause it's interesting.
Oh. So we did that. It was beautiful. Right. And he goes, where do you want to go next? And I said, well, you've been to Zion, right? And he goes, yeah, I've been to Zion. It's amazing. I said, well, let's go somewhere that you haven't gone. And he goes, well, you know, we could go here. I haven't been there. And I said, he goes, but you know what? You need to see Zion, Jason. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, let's go to Zion. We kind of made the decision together. And when we pulled into that place, it looks like Disney built it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look real. And I literally was just like, I'm filming this whole damn thing. This is just insane. And I don't know if you noticed, I mean, basically I'm riding like this, you know, I got my phone.
Holding the phone in front of you, right.
I got this hand on the handlebar and I'm riding, shooting, you know, like this the whole time. And it worked really well. That image stabilizer worked really well on that thing. And then I snap it back into the holder, you know, and I'm doing this like people can see me. But yeah, I got the phone in my left hand and my right hand on the throttle. And if I had to stop, I'd use the rear brake. And if I needed to really stop, I had to put the phone down because I had to pull the clutch in. But that place, yeah, if you get a chance, world, whoever hears this, you need to go to Zion.
Yeah.
If you like Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner, if you like the Roadrunner?
Yes, I do.
You need to go to Zion because that's where they shot it.
Wow. That's where Wile E. Coyote rams right into the side of the mountain or whatever, right?
And there's a tunnel that's like a mile and a half long that was, you know, it's insane. It's just the whole thing's insane. Now, on the other side of the coin, it was sacred American Indian place that we stole from them. So that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, go there and pay your respects to those, you know, people who came before us. But it's breathtaking.
Yeah.
God, yeah. I was only there for an afternoon. I want to go back and spend some time there.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, just seeing your film, that's the closest I got to going in there for the last year, because obviously we're all stuck in the house, so you can live through, you know, Jason's trip.
Watch it to the end, yeah.
Yeah, you have to. And there's some good music you put in there as well, so it's really, everybody listening, please check it out. And yeah, it's on my short list now. I never thought I'd ever want to go to Utah. Now I do. Now I care.
There you go. Utah is a beautiful place, man. It's a beautiful place. And up in the north in Park City, I've been there many, many times with Sundance and all that. Utah's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
You've got some strange ideas about religion out there, but you know what? It doesn't bother you. It doesn't get in your way. You can have a really wonderful time. It's a beautiful place.
There you go. And before I let you go, I'll ask you about teaching. You're also a teacher, and you help the next generation of actors. How's that going, and how do you like doing that? Oh, so?
Yes, no, I guess I'm hoping that I'm helping them. I don't know. Actually, right after that motorcycle trip, I decided – I was making a decision about what to do with the rest of my life on that trip. And a good friend of mine named Robert Mello, who teaches acting here in Atlanta, he said, Jason, you should teach. You have something you could offer people. You have experience. There's different methods in the acting world. And Robert teaches the Meisner method, or based on the Meisner method, as he would say it. I said, I'm a Strasburg guy. He goes, great, come work at my school. You know, I'll rent you some space and you can be the Strasburg guy. I'll be the Meisner guy and we can, you know, students can learn from both of them. Great. And I said, I don't know, man. I don't know. He goes, you could get out of that blind and shade thing you're doing. And, you know, and
there you go.
He didn't say that, but I said that to myself. And so I said, all right, tell you what, he came to see me about a week before my trip. He goes, I want to have lunch with you because you might die. I want to say goodbye and good luck. And I want you to, you know, really think about this teaching thing and let me know what you think when you get back. I'm like, I'm not going to die, Robert. Not this time anyway. Thank you for your words of support. And he was joking, of course. And so I thought about it, and I thought about a lot of things on that trip. I came home and sold my house after a few years and got rid of a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't need that was just weighing me down. And my wife was all with it, and so we've pared our life way down. And it's like, okay, I'm on the back nine now. I'm like, you know, I'm on the 11th hole. It's time to start thinking about time left. I've got less birthdays coming than I've had. There's a lot of things that I've always said, okay, someday. And I'm like, the day is now.
Yeah,
it's now. And so I came back and I said, all right, I'm going to do this, Rob. And I started my first class with a few poor, suffering people that helped me learn. But I didn't charge a whole lot. And now I've been teaching for 6.5 years. The pandemic really screwed everything up, but I do have classes now. I teach 5 classes a week, a maximum of 6 students. We socially distance and all that. And I think I'm helping some people. Not everyone. I'm not the right teacher for everyone. My style is not for everyone. And what I'm teaching is not for every actor. But most people that come in seem to get something from it. And some people I've been teaching for over 4 years now.
Awesome.
And I'm not really teaching them. I'm like, you know, we're working together at this point. You know, I'm just keeping them on track and providing them a place to come to the gym and work out. But I've discovered some new stuff by this guy named Nikolai Demidov. It's not that I discovered it. Somebody else kind of did. The book that the man wrote was not translated from Russian into English until 2016, and I got a hold of it, and it's a whole lot of really interesting, very simple, amazing acting techniques that nobody's teaching here in Atlanta or much of anywhere in the United States. And I took a course or two on it, so I'm not like some guru on this. I'm kind of learning it while I'm teaching it.
Yeah.
But everybody in my class seems to really, now that we're kind of getting into it better, and I'm getting better at helping them, and they're really, really digging it. So I'm teaching Strasburg and Nikolai Demidov and a little bit of Uta Hagen. I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I know Strasburg is a pitcher for the Nationals, but that's not who you're talking about. So. That's not an actor.
That's what I teach. I teach at a small studio in the Kirkwood area outside of Atlanta, and that's that's it. I do that 3 days a week.
That's awesome.
Five classes during those 3 days. And yeah, thanks for asking about that.
No, of course. Yeah, I saw the testimonials on the link you sent, and you know, just it's got to be something to feel that you're giving back. And you know, one of these actors could end up, you know, getting a big gig sometime. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered, I thought people would always ask me, you know, if you weren't an actor, what would you do? I said, well, I'd either be a park ranger or a teacher.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I wasn't married, if I had never gotten married, never had kids or anything, I was just going to be single the rest of my life. And the acting thing just never happened to me. I probably would have ended up working like at Yellowstone eventually if I could get that gig, you know, but being I just, you know, guiding other people and being in nature. And I've lost touch with nature here in the last 6.5 years because of many other factors, but I grew up, you know, camping and hunting and fishing, and I was an Eagle Scout and all that crap.
Oh, wow.
And I've gotten away from a lot of that, and that motorcycle trip was the last big thing I did, and it's been too long. I need to go back.
Do another one of those.
Something. So I got to do something. And I live in the city now, and I love the city, but you know, the asphalt and concrete's getting to me a little bit.
I never got as far as Eagle Scout, but I was a Weebelo for a while, so that was. I'm assuming
long way from Eagle Scout. Hey,
yeah,
you were there.
I was there, right? Cub Scouts, Eagle Scouts, had all the badges and everything, but teenage life sort of took over, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough trade-off.
Jason Warder-Smith, really appreciate your time, man. Anybody wants to follow you, if you want to give out your Twitter or Instagram, anything like that, or do you do Cameo, anything like that, fans can follow you and check up on you.
Yes. I am a C-list actor who you can pay to say nice things to you or other people on Cameo. Twitter, Instagram, it's Jason, J-A-Y-S-O-N-W Smith. It's pretty easy to find. On Facebook, it's just Jason Warder-Smith. It's a fan page that somebody nicely made for me, and every now and then I'll comment on there and put my initials by it. But so that's the social media thing. If you want to learn about me more intimately, you can go to my website, which is jasonsmith.com. That's JaySonSmith.com.
That's awesome. Once again, appreciate your time, Jason. This was an honor having you on, being a big Walking Dead nerd, and you know the movies you've done as well. And I got to get on watching the Mississippi Grind. That's next on the list, so I'll definitely check that out.
Check it out, man. It's a well-made film.
For sure.
Hey, thank you by the makers. They made Captain Marvel.
Oh, well, there
Same
you go.
Directors.
Hopefully we'll see Jason in one of these Marvel films sooner or later. Fingers crossed.
Someday. Yeah.
Thanks again, man. Really appreciate your time, dude.
Thanks, Mark.
Really an honor to talk to Jason Warder-Smith on here. I mean, it's really cool to get a chance to talk to guys who've done TV shows and movies and music that I like. And after doing this for 2 years, it's really been an honor and just gets me geeked to do this podcast every time I do it. So thanks again to Jason. And a couple of quick things that we talked about in the interview there. Those of you who might not know the reference, Farrah Fawcett wore a red bikini in a poster that was very popular back in the day. I recommend everybody look it up. Just type in Farrah Fawcett red bikini, red bathing suit, and you'll find what we were talking about there as he compared himself to Farrah Fawcett being against Carl, who was the Michael Jackson of that episode that he got his demise in. And Farrah Fawcett poster, something a lot of people had on their wall. There were a lot of Michael Jackson posters too. I think I might have had one. I'd have to think about it for a minute. I know I played Thriller to Death when it first came out, but I don't remember if I had a Michael Jackson poster or not. I'm not quite sure. And another thing, his documentary, Learning to Fly, I'll put a link on post about this episode, so definitely check out, you know, Infinite Banter on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I will post about it. Definitely need to watch it. For people like myself who hasn't been out of the state that I currently live in since, you know, a year and a half ago, it was a way to kind of feel like I went on vacation and watched somebody else do it, and it was a pretty cool experience, so definitely check that out. I have a link to that on my Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and of course, you could check it out on his website, jasonsmith.com.
Hey, this is Josh Michael of Walking Dead fame. You don't know who I am. You're listening to Infinite Banter.
Once you're done listening to the Infinite Banter podcast, make sure you go check out my friends over at the Dumb Found Dead podcast.
Do you enjoy dark comedy, puns, and laughter? If so, come join two good brothers, John and Patrick, as we discuss some of the craziest ways people die. That's so bizarre, strange, and borderline comical, that'll leave you dumbfounded. You can follow this podcast on all major platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Podcasts, Spotify, and many more. And make sure to follow us on social media on Instagram at The Dumbfounded Pod and on Twitter at TDFD Pod. And remember, think ahead, don't be dumbfounded.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's your man, Vincent M. Ward, a.k.a. Oscar from the number one show, The Walking Dead. And I'm here with my man, Mark, from Infinite Banter. Y'all better stay tuned. Peace.
So I said I had a cigarette story to talk about. So basically, my parents smoke when I grew up. They were smoking. They still do. I never smoked in my life, never smoked a cigarette. Wouldn't even know what to do. But recently, my mom asked me if I could get her a pack of cigarettes because she couldn't get out. And, you know, COVID and stuff, you know, it's a little tricky. So, you know, I'm not a fan of her smoking, but, you know, it's fine. I can do that. It's the least I can do. So, but only my own problem is, like, I don't know how to buy them. Like, what do I do? Obviously, I know you go to the counter and ask the dude, hey, can I get some cigarettes? But well, I actually shouldn't say like that because I probably think you're not really buying cigarettes. So they think you're probably buying it for somebody else, which is my problem because I don't know what she smokes. I don't know what they're called. And I didn't want to walk up there reading a phone, like, a, you know, reading the text. I was like, do you guys have Newport? You know, I don't want to look like I'm not buying for me because it might look like I'm selling it to some kid or giving it to some kid or something. So I kind of had to practice it. I should have taken Jason Warner Smith's acting class. I could learn how to walk up to a counter and order cigarettes or buy a pack of cigarettes and look like someone who's done it before, as opposed to someone who has no idea how to order these things. I keep saying order like it's food, buying them, purchase a pack of cigarettes. So I think I already forgot what it's called. It's like Newport 100 Menthol Light somethings. The good thing is you got the mask on, so they can't really see that I'm probably half smiling while I'm saying this because I want to laugh. But I figured, like, maybe if I kind of do it in like a grizzled voice, like a guy who smokes cigarettes, maybe they would believe me better. So, I mean, I'm really thinking way too much about this. Just telling you want a pack of cigarettes and get the hell out of there. But I had to, you know, overanalyze it so much. I'm just like, maybe if I do it like in a Nick Nolte voice, you know, oh, hell, let me get a back of Newport 100s and a Zagnut for dinner. Yeah. So that worked. You know, the guy didn't look at me twice. I said it. I felt like I didn't screw it up. I didn't want to be, damn it. Because when I was a kid, see, I had a flashback when I was a little kid. They used to send us to the store to buy cigarettes with them all the time back in the 80s. And this was not weird. This was something that happened. I grew up in Rogers Park, north side of Chicago. And they would actually sell cigarettes to kids if you had a note or you were telling them it was for your parents. And they just believed you. I don't know why that was okay, but it was. And I remember one time my mom and her friend asked me to go to get cigarettes for. Now, I knew my mom's back then because she smoked the same kind. And I've done it a few times. But her friend smoked something called Marlboros, and I didn't know how to say it. I was like 8, all right? So, you know, give me a break. So I went up to the store, and I ordered, let me get the Newports, whatever she wanted, and I said Marlboro. I couldn't say Marlboro. I think the guy thought I was saying Mullenbrow. She's like, I can't sell you that. That's beer. I'm like, why he didn't know that's what I was trying to say, I have no idea, but he wouldn't sell it to me. So I went back, and she was kind of teed off that I didn't have her cigarettes. And I'm like, yeah, he wouldn't sell me the Mullenbrow or whatever. She's like, no, it's Marlboro. I'm like, well, you know, I'm 8. I shouldn't be going to the store to buy you cigarettes. So it's just so stupid. I can't believe they let people do that. My grandpa used to send me to the store. He'd write a note, and you couldn't even read any of it. It looked like I wrote it. And, you know, the guy would sell me cigarettes, and it was just ridiculous. And he would send me out there with, like, change and a couple of wadded-up dollars, and I'd be getting him his pack of Camel, you know, menthols. I don't know what this stuff's called because I don't buy it. So people who smoke cigarettes out there, you know, I feel your pain as far as like buying cigarettes and standing there. But yeah, just don't send kids to do it. But I don't think you could do that anymore. I'm assuming laws have gotten better where they don't let kids buy cigarettes anymore. I just couldn't believe I got away with it and they would actually sell me cigarettes thinking. And it always was. I mean, I was actually legitimately buying them for these other people. But I would imagine some kids could pull that off and go in the back of the alley and smoke their cigarettes and eat their now-laters or whatever they were doing back in the 80s. So, all right. So, yeah. My tip for the day is if you're going to buy cigarettes with somebody and you don't know how to order them, you don't smoke, try to do it like in maybe a Sam Elliott or a Nick Nolte voice. Just sound more tough, more grizzled. So it sounds like you are a smoker. Maybe it'd be easier for you. If you're a woman, I don't know who, Kathleen Turner, maybe. Maybe you do a Kathleen Turner voice. So, all right, that's my flashback and story of buying cigarettes because I have no idea how to do it.
Yeah, you already know who it is. It's Kay, It's your boy Eddie Kane, man. I'm with DJ Soundwave. Don't play yourself, man. You tuned in to Infinite Banner Podcast. Stay locked. You know the best is here, baby. Yeah.
Time for you to leave, assholes.
That is Kirk Acevedo telling me it is time to go, and that is exactly what I'm going to do. And by the way, that clip you just heard that I play on the show every time when it's time to leave, that's from Walker Stalker Con when I met Kirk Acevedo. Wow, this is like 2019. Feels like eons ago, but that's a line from The Walking Dead. So since this is a Walking Dead featured episode, maybe you guys want to go back and check out that. I think it was like 2 or 3 minutes I got to talk to him at his table at the Walker Stalker Con. You can go back and hear in context what he was talking about, but many Walking Dead fans remember that's when he's in the tank and they're trying to take over Rick's prison. And Kirk Acevedo's character is not nice. He's telling him it's time to get the hell out of there. So time for you to leave, asshole. And that's what I'm going to do. So thanks again to Jason Warner Smith. Go check him out at jasonsmith.com. That's Jason. Check out his Cameo. Follow him on Twitter. He's a really good follow on Twitter. Let's get him into a Marvel movie. Come on, Marvel. Disney, if you're listening, let's get him in one of these movies, maybe the next Captain Marvel or something. It definitely was fun to talk to Jason, and I look forward to seeing more of his stuff and future works he does. And I'll post, you know, where to find his website and Learning to Fly and everything and how to follow Jason. So definitely follow me on all digital platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Infinite Banter Podcast. You can even bother me personally at DJ Soundwave 75. Doesn't matter to me. Listen to the show on all digital platforms, the usual places, Spotify, iTunes, now we're on Good Pods, radio.com, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. Rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts and go on YouTube, type in Infinite Banter and hear clips from past guests, and they will have links to those full episodes. Before I go, just wanted to mention, The Walking Dead is back. Only a couple more episodes in this little mini in-between 10 and 11 season going on. And I mentioned a last episode that I really liked how it was like a Predator episode. The one with Aaron and Gabriel was pretty cool because it reminded me of Deer Hunter with the Russian roulette. And had Robert Patrick guest star on that one playing two different characters. A little reference to Predator again, you know, in that one. Spoiler here, by the way. Aaron kills a wild boar. And just like in Predator, he thinks it's a killer and it's a boar. And in Predator, Bill Duke's character, Mac, ends up killing a boar thinking it's the Predator. So, reminded me a lot of that. And, of course, Gabriel's character falls into the mud, has it all over his face, can't see him, just like in Predator. I'm just a Predator nerd. Everything's Predator, so I'll find a way to connect it. I'm a weirdo like that. And, of course, you got the rom-com. Daryl finally, I believe he got some, unless it was like a weird dream or something. But a rom-com with Daryl, the closest thing you'll ever get to a rom-com on this show. So, love Walking Dead. Glad it's still on. Going to get some spinoffs coming up here. I know a lot of people have jumped off, but I am still here. And once again, thanks to my man Jason Warner Smith. Go check him out at jasonsmith.com. That's it for the show. Appreciate everybody for listening. Until I do the next one, I'm out.
Hey, asshole, get off the road.
Being on the Infinite Banner with my man Mark has been a pleasure.